Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. If you have just joined us, you are listening to Radio Islam International. Welcome to our weekly program that is Family Health Matters. I am your host, Sister Zenith. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Well, listeners, in today's program, I would like to share with you ways to lower your toxic exposure. And what I would like to discuss in here, inshallah, is first of all, you know, we talk about toxic exposure, we talk about toxins, but do we really know what are toxins? So we're going to be talking about what are toxins, we're going to look at common symptoms of toxicity and also ways to lower your toxic exposure. And you'll be surprised where all this comes from, inshallah. And then in the second part of the program, we're looking at the benefits of vitamin C. We're going to look at the clinical uses, the functions of vitamin C. And there's three very important functions that we want to talk about. Then also some popular uses and signs of deficiency of vitamin C. So I hope you will be listening and taking notes if necessary, because these are some very important points, pertinent points that we will be talking about. This information is from the book called Natural Medicine. It's the September issue 2015. And yes, they have some wonderful information for all of us. So for those that don't have access to these books, then this is what I will share with you, inshallah. Well, let's start off with our first part of the program, and we're going to be talking about ways to lower your toxic exposure. But first, I think the very important thing that we need to do, the very important question is not whether you are toxic, but rather how toxic are you? Actually, I think almost each and every one of us do have some form of toxins in our body. And that is one of the reasons that many people, you know, if you go to natural health practitioners, well, even medical practitioners, I'm sure, they would ask you or they would tell you to, you know, cleanse, to go on to, you know, try and get rid of all the toxins in your body first. And once the toxins are out of your body, and then healing takes place. Now, there's been a sharp increase in potential exposure to environmental toxins. You know, sometimes we don't always just eat up the wrong things. We don't just eat the wrong things. It's what we breathe in, what our skins absorb. You know, it's amazing that your skins can also absorb toxins. So the environment plays a very important role as well. Over the past decades, they say about 80,000 potential exposure to environmental toxins. There's about 80,000 of it, a fact that pretty much guarantees you are harboring some level of toxicity. A toxin, then, is defined as a substance or a mixture that can cause harm to a living organism. And we're looking at industrial chemicals, pesticides, plastic compounds, food additives, preservatives, and heavy metals. These are some examples of them. Now, over the past few decades, there has been a steady increase in chronic diseases such as chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia, increased food sensitivities, and then degenerative diseases like Parkinson's disease, dementia, learning disorders, and the ever-growing numbers of people diagnosed with cancer. You know, there are so many people that are diagnosed with cancer. It's become so common, you know. Almost every household you go to, there's always somebody that has cancer. The most common symptoms of toxicity in the body includes headaches, fatigue, sore muscles, sore joints, brain fog, irritability, mood swings, food sensitivities, eczema, and digestive problems. I'm sure just listening to these symptoms, every one of us sitting or perhaps just listening to this program are already saying, oh, but I do have lots of headaches. Oh, yes, but I do suffer from fatigue. Sore muscles and joints, I don't think there's a person that would not say I am suffering from that. Then all these symptoms, you know, we can relate to each and every symptoms of those. These are common ones that we suffer from every day of our lives. So what does that tell us? That we do have some form of toxicity in our body. There's a lot of toxins in our body and we need to get rid of it. Where diagnosis is concerned, apart from the more obvious physical symptoms, a range of blood tests and genetic screenings can be done to assess the various systems in the body that might be affected. And of course, these would include the liver and the kidney functions. Those I'll tell you immediately. Inflammatory markers, heavy metal testing, glucose, insulin, and hormonal level testing, as well as screening genetic markers linked to an impaired detoxification ability of the liver. So all these things. You may be suffering from some degree of toxicity if you are. Once again, some points to think about, some symptoms to think about. If you are bloated, how many of us are not bloated? Nauseous or have indigestion, very common too, or you experience muscle stiffness and or painful joints, have low energy levels, so many of us, and we always blame it to the weather sometimes when it's very hot, or you know, our blood pressure has gone a bit low, so our energy levels are gone low, or our blood sugar is gone low. You know, and then we just look for excuses for why we feel the way we feel. Or perhaps we get headaches, we have dark circles under our eyes, or we have dry skin or rashes, or we suffer from chronic infection and sinusitis. These are such common, symptoms that it's like those, you know, we call them everyday symptoms, common ones, but when we do suffer from these, we need to remember that we may be having toxins in our body. Not maybe, we will be having some kind of toxin in our body. Right, now what we're going to do is we're going to look at ways to lower your toxic exposure. That's the best thing to do, is to try and lower it. Make sure. And they say the best way to reduce the level of chemicals in your body is to limit the number that gain entrance. So, if you pay attention to the following points, you will lower your toxic load, inshallah. Number one, tobacco smoke. Smoking, the leading source of indoor air pollution, exposes you to over 4,000 compounds. I think that's the most important one to do. Stop smoking and stop being in an environment where there is smoking taking place, because it's not only the smoke that you inhale as a smoker, but it's also the people around you that are inhaling the bad smoke, the smoke that you are breathing out. So you need to be careful of that. That is one of the ways to lower your toxic load. Be mold aware. Now, inhaling mold spores in an unventilated bathroom can cause allergies, asthma, and other respiratory diseases. Always thoroughly clean water-damaged carpets and keep moisture levels to a minimum. Check under indoor plants for possible mold growth. If humidity is a concern, then purchase a dehumidifier that lowers humidity levels. You know, I don't think we ever take note of this, but this is very important. Be mold aware. You know, sometimes our carpets are wet in the bathroom. We have all these plants in our homes, indoor plants, but we need to water features that we sometimes have. But look out for mold. That is one of the one of the ways where toxins are exposed. Then number three is to eat organic fruits and vegetables. If it is not practical to switch to 100% organic, the environmental working group, that's a non-profit research organization based in the USA, identified the 12 most pesticide-laden fruits and vegetables. Now, if you would like to find out what those are, there's a list of the most and the least contaminated product picked. You can visit the group's website at www.ewg.org. There you will get all the information that you need. There's a list of the most and the least contaminated produce picks. Number four is to use shower and drinking water filters. Use shower and drinking water filters. Filtering your water and attaching a shower filter will reduce your exposure to chlorine and to fluoride. Chlorination byproducts are linked to elevated risk of birth defects, miscarriage, and bladder cancer. I don't think we ever thought of this, but you know, we need to be careful about the use of shower and drinking water filters. If you filter your water and you attach a shower filter, this will actually reduce your exposure to chlorine and fluoride in the water. Number five is leave your dry cleaning to ventilate. I wonder how many of us do it. You know, when you do get your dry cleaners, your clothes from the dry cleaners, do you leave it to ventilate before you pack it away? Well, they say you need to place your dry cleaning outside its bag for a day or two in the garage, or perhaps even outside, weather permitting. Otherwise, within 48 hours after you hang your dry cleaned clothes in your cupboard, your home will contain elevated levels of solvent. The Environmental Protection Agency lists tetrachloroethylene, that's a common dry cleaning solvent, as a probable carcinogen, also one of the toxins that we actually can absorb or get into our bodies. Number six is to scrutinize your personal care products. Now, many beauty products contain phthalates, that's a family of chemicals known to cause birth defects. How many of us ever, you know, read the ingredients on all our, you know, beauty products that we buy? We need to be very careful. It can cause birth defects, these chemicals that are found in, these beauty products that we use. Could cause birth defects. Fortunately for consumers, there's a book called Don't Go to the Cosmetics Counter Without Me, has been published by a person called Paula Bigone. For more information, once again, you can visit the website, which is www.paulaschoice.com, paulaschoice.com. So be careful of even your beauty products. You need to be so careful what, you know, check the ingredients. If there's anything called products that contain phthalates, then you should avoid it. Then number seven is to use non-toxic insect repellents. And, you know, now with summer coming in and flies and mosquitoes on the increase and cockroaches on the increase, we need to be very careful. Long-term effects of pesticides exposure may include damage to the liver and the central nervous system, as well as cancer. the likelihood of becoming ill from exposure to pesticides depends on a number of factors, such as the type and the amount of pesticides, the concentration and the strength, or the length of exposure and the route of entry into the body. Health effects from pesticide exposure may occur right away as you are being exposed, and some symptoms may occur several hours after exposure. Other effects may not be noticed for years. For example, cancer. You know, years later you develop cancer and you don't even know what the cause really was. And if you think of it, sometimes it's all the insecticides and insect repellents that we use over the years. Now, also pesticides can enter your body during mixing, applying or cleanup operations. So people, you know, working with the making of all these pesticides, they need to be very careful too. When applying or cleanup operations, when you're busy doing that, these people, you know, that come and fumigate your homes and your businesses and your working places and things like that, you know, they need to be very careful too. How they use it, they are exposed to it so much, and people around, you know, when they are coming in to do all these fumigations, you need to make sure that people are not around the you know, if it's maybe fumigating for cockroaches and they're busy in your homes, all opened ingredients, groceries, we need to be so careful. We need to remove all of that before you allow people to come and fumigate and spray all these pesticides in your homes. There are generally three ways a chemical or a material can enter the body. Now, it can go through the skin. The skin absorbs it. It can go through the lungs or by mouth. Lungs is through your nose or through your mouth. When you breathe it in through your mouth, or when your mouth is open, and you know, you can also breathe through your mouth. Exposure can take place via a splash or a mist when mixing. Loading or applying the pesticide, you need to be very careful. Skin contact can also occur when you touch a piece of equipment, protective clothing, or surface that has pesticide residue on it. And inhalation may occur when working near powders, airborne droplets, or mist, or vapors. So these are some of the ways whereby, or where you can absorb all these pesticides, all these toxins. Number 8 is to substitute household cleaners. Yeah, we have so many household cleaners. Now listen to this. Cleaning products, including detergents, can be overly chemical laden, especially these scented ones. You need to look for chemical-free products at your health shop, wellness, warehouse, or discount stores. Alternatively, make your own. Now, we do have a few recipes, one or two recipes, but I don't think I'll have time to share them with you. If we do, at the end of the program, then I would share those two recipes with you. And also, of course, number 9 is to limit the use of paint, varnish, and wax. All of the above contain cancer-causing organic chemicals. And you should try, and always remember, not try, but you must make sure that you choose non-toxic paints. And finally, the 10th one is don't buy products pre-soaked in formaldehyde. Particle board, plywood, and permanent press fabrics contain formaldehyde. A suspected carcinogen that can cause everything from nausea to headaches to asthma attacks. Yes, one we need to make very sure. Now, you can make your own cleaning products. Before the use of chemicals in household cleaning agents, herbs and essential oils perform the role of antibacterial agents perfectly well. They are very effective against bacteria, fungi, and the growth of microorganisms. I've got the recipes. Hopefully, if I have a few minutes, I will share it with you. Or else, if you do have the copy of the Natural Health Remedies, Natural Health magazine, then it is in there. I will see if I can do it a little later in the program, or else maybe I will just leave these recipes with Sister Faiza, and if anybody wants them, they can perhaps get them. But you'll have to find out where some of these ingredients can be found. They say you can only add you can always add a few drops of essential oils to natural ingredients such as distilled white vinegar, lime or lemon juice, or spring water to create a quick cleaning product that does not harm you, your family, or the environment, while it is incredibly effective against dirt and bacteria. You know, so yeah, instead of buying all these things, we should try and just make our own. There's a recipe for a dishwasher powder and also a dishwasher liquid, but we need to be very careful before we use any of these. I don't know if they can use it in all dishwashers, but I think it's better if I don't share it with our listeners. But if they would like to, they can always, find out how it's made and use it. They say the ammonia in household cleaners often irritates the skin, the eyes, the throat, and the lungs. And this can cause asthma and kidney and liver damage. So, yes, I think we need to think twice before we use all of these household cleaners that are available on the market. We're going to take a break, inshallah. When we come back, we're going to be talking about the benefits of vitamin C. Today, we're going to look at the clinical uses, the functions of it, the popular uses, and the science of deficiency of vitamin C. Stay tuned. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome back to Family Health Matters. I'm your host, Sister Zainat, and we're going to look at the benefits of vitamin C for the next few minutes, inshallah. Firstly, vitamin C is a water-soluble vitamin, and it's found in many plant sources. It is also a powerful antioxidant that is necessary for tissue growth, adrenal function, and also oral health. The C is the difference. Now, vitamin C has a number of clinical uses, and it ranges from fighting the common cold to preventing heart disease and also, of course, cancer. Storage and heating destroys vitamin C. Now, I don't know if people were aware of that, but the storage and the heating process destroys vitamin C. And if you are under stress, whether physical or emotional, this also, is one of the reasons that your vitamin C gets destroyed. The body's needs for the vitamin increases tremendously. People who eat junk food or even those badly stored food or live in institutions will all be deficient in vitamin C. So while vitamin C deficiency may not always be obvious, marginal vitamin C deficiency is a major problem today. In fact, 76% of patients with cancer have low vitamin C reserves. Now, if we look, before we go on to the functions of the vitamin C, I would like to just share with you a little bit of the history of vitamin C. It's interesting because, you know, sometimes we talk about all these things, but we don't know where it comes from. Now, they say in the winter of 1556, an epidemic of scurvy swept through Europe. Now, scurvy actually was a disease, or is a disease still, that It is indicated by spots on the skin, spongy gums, and bleeding from almost all mucous membranes. And this led to the discovery of vitamin C centuries ago. Okay, so this epidemic broke out in the year 1556 throughout Europe, and nobody knew what the lack of fruits and vegetables during those harsh months had actually caused the outbreak. Little research was done at this stage to cure the disease, although Jacques Cartier, who was an explorer, noted that his sailors who had eaten oranges, limes and berries did not get the disease. So, you know, when you were out on the boat, it was out, you were there out for years on end, or months on end, before you see land again. And that was the reason why so many of the people actually, started getting this disease called scurvy. Now, in 1742, James Lind, who was a British doctor, gave multiple doses of lemon juice to patients with scurvy. And they actually healed. Now, from this point on, many sailors adopted a citrus-rich diet on their long voyages. So this is when they started, taking citrus-rich fruits. So they would take lots of oranges or fruits that contained lots of, vitamin C, actually. It was only in the early 1900s, however, that the importance of vitamin C in a daily diet to ward off scurvy was realized. So it started off with sailors, basically. The true father of vitamin C was Linus Pauling in 1901 to 1994. He was an American chemist and scientist, and Pauling strongly advocated that high doses of vitamin C might be a cure for many illnesses, including cancer and heart disease. And he struggled relentlessly against those in the medical field who labeled him as a quack. But Pauling did not give up, convincing many of the benefits of high-dose vitamin C, and for him, the implication for health was paramount, a possible evasion of premature death and unnecessary suffering from heart disease, infection, and many cancers. So basically, this was a little bit of the history of vitamin C. Now, if we go back to looking at the functions of vitamin C. Actually, vitamin C has three major functions in the body. First one is the antioxidant functions, and vitamin C is probably one of the most important antioxidants in the body, and also supports other antioxidants such as vitamin E and carotenes. Then the second function of vitamin C is that vitamin C helps to form strong connective tissue. It also repairs wounds. It improves gum health and, of course, reduces bruising. Collagen is a structural protein that holds the body together. In scurvy, the tissues literally fall apart. And then the third function is the immune system support. This, together with its anti-cancer effect, is perhaps the most controversial of vitamin C properties. Now, vitamin C has a number of clinical uses, ranging from immune boosting to preventing heart disease and cancer. And I'm now going to be just sharing with you a few of its most popular uses. Of course, clinical uses are a lot, but I'm going to talk to you about the common ones or the popular ones. The first one we're going to talk about is common colds and influenza. Now, we always hear the problem is, vitamin C is mentioned only after we start getting the cough and the cold and the flu comes in. Then we decide to take or increase in our vitamin C. We shouldn't be doing that, in fact. We should be doing that long before that. So when you do get a common cold or you do get the flu, it is not so severe. Now, with regards the colds and the flu, it says vitamin C has been touted for ages as an immune system booster. Starting to take high doses of vitamin C immediately, you notice the first symptoms may abort the infection within 24 hours. Use at least 1 gram every 2 hours. But can you imagine if you've already started months in advance? You know, we know sometimes what time of the year that, you know, although the flu and colds are throughout the year, but it increases, when the winter months come in, and we know that before that happens, we need to boost our immune system. And how do we do it? Is by increasing our vitamin C. Even in children, I know they give them, so many things to take just to increase their, to boost their immune system. Vitamin C is very important. It's also good for skin ulcers and wound healing. Vitamin C is essential in collagen formation and therefore in tissue repair. This need is especially apparent in elderly and institutionalized individuals on a poor diet without enough fresh food. Bed sores are a classic case in which vitamin C treatment should always be considered. Easy bruising may be another good reason to take this vitamin. So if you know of people that bruises very easily, then remind them to, or tell them or ask them to start taking vitamin C or increase in their vitamin C. Cataracts, also very common. There is some evidence that taking vitamin C together with other nutrients such as selenium and vitamin E will lower the risk of developing cataracts and macular degeneration, something that's becoming very, very common these days. With regards to cancer prevention and treatment, when one takes into account the massive amount of material on the subject, it seems strange that there should be any controversy about using vitamin C in cancer treatment. Yet, it is clear why this is so. The cancer industry does not want to believe that natural substance can be used to kill cancer cells, even though there is plenty of evidence that a whole lot of foods have anti-cancer properties. Foods such as curcumin, that is an ingredient that is actually found in turmeric powder, the root, it looks like turmeric is actually a root. It looks like ginger, but the inside of it is yellow, so that's where the turmeric powder is made of, and the curcumin is found. Green tea also, grape seeds, cauliflower, broccoli, mushrooms, and so on, have all been found to contain ingredients with anti-cancer properties. You know, they always tell you to have lots of green vegetables and yellow vegetables. This is also to prevent cancer and also when you are suffering from cancer. Ascorbic acid is a special case. When used in high quantities, its function not just by stimulating the immune system or through its powerful antioxidant effects, but also by a direct effect on cancer cells. Vitamin C is a selective anti-cancer agent, and although this is often refuted by conventional oncologists, there is more science behind the use of vitamin C in cancer than behind most chemotherapy. There is also good evidence that patients with cancer receiving chemotherapy will do better if they take vitamin C. So if you are a cancer patient and you are on chemotherapy, at least they say you should actually be taking vitamin C. Well, how much, I'm not going to tell you exactly because I'm not quite sure how much you can take, but it does help a lot as well. And then for asthma and other allergies, vitamin C is a major antioxidant and also has antihistamine properties. A number of studies have shown that a dose of 1 or 2 grams per day, this vitamin brings about a significant improvement in respiratory measures and asthma symptoms. We're going to take a short break now. When we come back, we'll talk about cardiovascular disease and how vitamin C is good for that, a little bit about diabetes support, and of course, if we have time, yeah, well, I hope we can complete this because it is very important for us to take as much vitamin C as we possibly can. So stay with us. We'll be back in a few moments. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome back to Family Health Matters. We're talking about the benefits of vitamin C, and we spoke about some of the functions of vitamin C, the three major functions in the body that vitamin C has. It's number one is the antioxidant functions, collagen formation, and immune system support. It also has a number of clinical uses, ranging from immune boosting to preventing heart disease, and of course also cancer. And we are now talking about some of the most popular uses. We spoke about common colds and influenza, skin ulcers and wound healing, cataract, cancer prevention and treatment, the importance of vitamin C there. We also spoke about asthma and other allergies, and now we're looking at cardiovascular disease. Well, there's a great deal of evidence of the benefits of vitamin C in cardiovascular disease, both for prevention and for treatment. Now, in one study, vitamin C appeared to increase survival and decrease the risk of dying from heart attacks in those receiving it. Many other studies confirm and support the use of vitamin C to prevent cardiovascular disease. And vitamin C has also been used to treat conditions called angina and hypertension, and also in people with high cholesterol. With regards to diabetes, they say with regards to diabetes support, vitamin C reduces insulin resistance, contributes to eye health, and also helps prevent cataracts. Now, this is of course a common complication of diabetes. Added to that, vitamin C contributes to improved circulation. It's a powerful antioxidant, and it helps fight infections, which of course frequently occur in people that are diabetic. If you look at some of, who may benefit from vitamin C supplements or supplementation, then we're looking at athletes and those whose work involves physical activity, those with demanding lifestyle, people whose diets contain little fresh fruit and vegetables, smokers, people that drink alcohol, those wishing to maintain normal cholesterol levels, people on birth control pills, and those who take aspirin, hormone replacement therapy, hypertension medication, anti-inflammatory medicines, and corticosteroids. Athletes exposed to brief periods of intense physical exercise. Those people, these people, of course, will benefit from vitamin C supplementation. But there's a caution here. Please be careful. Large doses of vitamin C may block the action of warfarin if you are taking warfarin, requiring an increase in dose to maintain its effectiveness. So also, I think very important is any form of medication or natural medication, you should consult your practitioner, natural or medical practitioner. Now, if you're looking at sources and dosage, where do you get vitamin C from? Oh, it is found in many food sources, including peppers, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, red cabbage, strawberries, papayas, spinach, oranges. Now we know of oranges, definitely. Grapefruit, mangoes, asparagus, and so on. So it's all those dark, you know, the orange vegetables, the red vegetables, the green leafy vegetables. You know, mostly you find a lot of vitamin C in there. Most of the scientific studies of vitamin C have been performed with straight ascorbic acid. And by the way, ascorbic acid is available as crystals, powders, capsules, tablets, and even timed release tablets. And the dose of vitamin C should be spread throughout the day, so timed release tablets are probably a good idea for those not used to taking tablets, you know, 3 or 4 or even 6 times a day. The recommended daily allowance for vitamin C is between 1 and 3 grams per day. And if we're looking at side effects, well, they're very rare, but some people experience diarrhea while consuming high doses. So yes, basically, that's where you can, you know, that is some of the sources and the amount of, you know, vitamin C that one should actually take. And just to conclude our program for today, vitamin C is a major nutrient, but while it is very popular and it is used by millions of people around the world, it does not have the clarity of use that drugs or even many herbs have. Vitamin C is an essential nutrient, and any deficiency, whether absolute or marginal, can cause mild to serious problems. So yeah, one needs to be you know, very careful of that. Just one point, you know, if you want to know whether you are deficient in some way from, you know, of vitamin C, then a few of the signs of deficiency of vitamin C is bleeding gums. Many people suffer from bleeding gums, and one of the, you know, a cause could be deficiency in vitamin C. Poor healing of wounds and bruises, muscular atrophy, skin lesions, rheumatic pain in the legs, and depression. So these are just some of the signs of deficiency. If you perhaps suffer from some of them, maybe one or two of them, please have it seen to, and, you know, if need be, get yourself on some, you know, or make sure that you have, you take some kind of vitamin C. But once again, a reminder to our listeners that, you know, don't just go out and do it all on your own. Please consult your doctor, your medical doctor, or your natural health practitioner. Well, listeners, I hope this would be of some benefits from you. More information I shared with you is from the Natural Medicine magazine. It's the September 2015 issue, number 123. Well, listeners, that's it then from me. Until next time, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.